Welcome in to episode 3 of the Let It Fly podcast. I'm Ravi Lula. We've got Taylor Stormberg and Michael Vandervoort, the boss kind of us three at least.
Pretty
nice. He's the one in charge here. We are we're coming to you right what day is it? Friday afternoon. We're going to get you ready for the Georgetown game tomorrow morning, as well as go over couple of the last couple games that we haven't had a chance to recap for you yet, and who knows, we might get into some craziness as well. I know before we started we were talking about Taylor's two-a-day workout program. I don't know what he's I don't know if he's training for the G League or what's going on here, Taylor. Like, hey, what's the deal here?
There's a contract in the near future, Ravi. It just, I don't think it has anything to do with basketball. I'm on a 10 day. It's my second one. So it just has nothing to do with hoops.
I've been on a 10 day before, but it was followed by the word bender. So
see, that's what I was on from Christmas until I started doing dry February. And so for the last 10 days, I have been both sober and working out extremely hard.
There we go. I do you want to take this opportunity to announce you're going to be part of the basketball tournament? Is that in your future?
I don't know. I have to get an invitation from Josh Jones and our very own Michael Vandervoort.
Hey, I mean, might be on the table. These are the things I love to hear about the off season.
putting in the work.
Yeah, guys,
gonna,
just out here grinding for the TBT.
We're gonna have to consider him as a backup PG.
Taylor's going to be in better shape for the basketball tournament than James Harden's going to be for the NBA playoffs. So,
very true. Very true. Wild, wild NBA day yesterday.
Okay, so can we talk about this real quick? Did you guys see the tweet about James Harden?
No.
Oh, yeah.
So oh, yeah. The James Harden trade was not broken by Sham. It wasn't broken by Woj. It was broken by a stripper.
It's true.
Who, the night before the trade deadline, so Wednesday night, she tweets out, just gave James Harden a lap dance. He says he's a Sixer now. And she was getting roasted for it. And then 21 hours later, like 19 hours later, she just replies to her own tweet, told you.
Wow.
That's amazing. There'll be a lot of apologies in that feed.
I love it. Twitter is one of the greatest gifts that we have.
Yes, it is. I cannot believe it. Who needs an agent anymore?
I know. You've just got your strippers and you're good.
You find somebody, right, find a public figure.
Who needs woes? Who needs sham bombs? I mean,
yeah.
Just tell them at Magic City what's happening and they'll get it out there. No, you know what? Actually, I've thought about this before, and we'll get to Jay's stuff at some point, I promise. But I don't understand why any of the top guys in the leagues have agents. They're getting the max. Why are you paying somebody to get you the max when you're getting the max? It doesn't make any sense.
You're just cutting that. You're cutting 10% immediately off of your paycheck.
Yeah, like what do you need that person for? Like if you're LeBron or Steph or who, like, you know, like, what's the most money you can give me? All right, that's the number. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I was just Steph Curry's agent. Thank you. Give me 3% now.
Yeah, thank you.
There's probably return on the marketing side. The contract side is certainly interesting.
Most of those guys have, like, managers, though, right? Most of their sports agents don't get their other stuff done.
Well, it depends. I think a lot of those firms have – you'll have the – specific contract side, and then you'll have guys that just do the marketing piece.
So you have like a whole team at the firm is what you're saying.
Yeah. And, okay. and that's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Whereas like, what is your duty as assigned by, you know, in LeBron's case, Nike, right? Like,
sure.
And no one will speak about that contract, but I think it's honestly $1 billion. Like, I think Nike just said, here's the biggest check we can write you.
Yeah, and it's a lifetime deal, right? It's just a lifetime deal. Here's $1 billion. We have the two greatest basketball players that ever lived, both under contract for the rest of their lives, basically.
Mike, I am just letting you know that I would be expecting the exact same deal
If it was the LeBron deal. He wasn't LeBron.
If you're interested in having me on the tournament team as the backup PG.
Let me tell you, here's what I'll cover. I'll cover your food expenses. We last year partook in some Chick-fil-A. Some Lanchkeesh.
Oh,
and a little Pozzoli's pregame. I mean, the TBT eating regimen is about as AAU as it gets.
I was gonna say, I'm having flashbacks to my NAI coaching days with your with your spread that you're laying out there. It's like, all right, this is off topic, but one of the worst experiences of my life. This is when I was playing at the lowest level of college basketball known to mankind. It's below NAI. There's NAI, and then we were the teams that NAI teams would pay for their bye games, okay? So we were below that. And one of the games, our paycheck was, or part of our paycheck was a free meal at Famous Dave's for everybody on the team, right? And I was like, that's great. All right, that's a great deal. I'm down for that, because most of the time we were eating like Subway. But our coach, in all of his wisdom, decided he didn't want to stick around until after the late game on Saturday to go out to Famous Dave. So he's like, we'll just eat before the game. Like, right before the game. We were at I think we left Famous Dave's like 90 minutes to tip off.
Best time to get to the arena.
Just just licking barbecue sauce off.
Yeah, we were like wet napping in the cargo vans on the way over to the facility there. I can't even call it an arena, I don't think. Although it was Dakota Wesleyan's gym, I think. So I think it counts as an arena. Ours certainly did not. But yeah, so we're wiping, you know, we've got the like moist towelettes and everything. We got barbecue sauce on the ball and everything. And I think that's the most I've ever seen any basketball team close to vomiting during an actual game.
The actual game.
Because that's just sitting in your stomach, right?
Yeah. Not ideal.
So, Michael, if I can give you any advice in running the basketball tournament team, maybe put the pregame meal either a little lighter.
Yep.
Or a little further ahead of tip off. That would be my suggestion.
I'm taking notes. Taking
notes. Maybe swing over to a Chili's instead of Famous Dave's. You know, some apps, half priced apps.
Maybe someplace with a salad.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Maybe an Olive Garden, you know, just soup and salad only.
Soup, salad, and breadsticks. Got to get the breadsticks, get a little carbs in there for the energy. Let's see what we can do. Good times. Small college basketball is a whole, I know Taylor doesn't have that experience, but it's a whole different ball game.
Hey, Missouri Valley, pal. I'll tell you all you need to know.
We did take buses. We took buses.
You weren't taking the PJ to games in the Valley?
No. We were not.
That's all right. Did you ever have a bus breakdown?
No, I don't think we did. Did we, Mike?
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Maybe before me. I feel like I remember Quinga. No, yeah. It was Quinga driving himself, and he had car problems.
Yeah, I don't think we ever had a bus breakdown. No. It was pretty smooth. When you got a guy like Jeff Vanderloo running your basketball
operations.
That's true. You're right.
Ooh. Vanderloo's a pro.
That man, let me tell you, detail-oriented.
We had our bus breakdown on the way down to Nationals once when I was coaching. And we, like, took it in because it's like, hey, this tire looks a little low. And they're like, yeah, that tire's not low. It's about to explode. So good thing you brought it in. Mm-hmm. Also, your engine does not work. It's leaking a lot of oil. And we're like, cool. So we're eating McDonald's the entire time we're down in at Nationals because we spent all of our food budget to make sure our van worked to get down there.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It was actually, I'm going to tie this back into an actual Creighton topic.
Let's here, do it.
Robbie, is the Cudahy team that was sponsored last game against Butler. So represented on the warm-up jerseys. They had a very similar story. Their bus broke down. I think it was like 4 or 5 miles outside of the arena they were playing at. Mm-hmm. And they all walked to the game. I think it was winter, middle of winter, they all walked to the game to play the game.
Dang.
Really cool story.
I think we have a dog situation over there, Taylor. Is that what's happening?
Yes, we do. We're good now.
That's all right. My dog is just literally just sitting here staring at me and licking my arm because I'm not paying attention to him. So I understand. we will get to Creighton, though. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't have a plan to get this back on track. I just was driving off the road here.
Throw me a softball right here, Robbie.
let's start off with the Butler game. Not a pretty basketball experience, I wouldn't describe it as. That was I think calling it a rock fight would be too much ammunition. I don't even know what that was. A pillow fight, maybe? I don't know.
It just was not, yes. It was not pretty by any means. I mean, both teams just really struggled to score the basketball, as you could tell. The 54-52 finish. It somehow Creighton comes out on top after going almost 9 minutes without scoring a bucket, and then you've got Ryan Nemhard at the end with the right hand finish in the paint to put a field goal on the floor. I mean, it's unbelievable. We saw it against Seton Hall, right, where they started the game like that, and then at the end against Butler, I mean, it was 8 minutes and 51 seconds.
So it basically feels like, because it wasn't just Seton Hall and Butler, there's basically a 10-minute stretch of every game where Creighton just doesn't score.
Yeah.
They're just like, nope, we're going to get all of our points in these 30 minutes, and we're going to surprise you with a 10-minute stretch where we don't score. So if we can't outscore you in 30 minutes, we're not winning this game. That's basically what it's been for the last like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I went back and I looked at it because I asked Mac about this on the post game show this week, and just what's going on, struggling to score. But the last six games, this team's been averaging 55.5 points. And so it is, I mean, it's almost like a little mini slump, if you will, from a scoring perspective. And it's kind of come in a multitude of different ways. I mean, normally it's, we can't make outside shots, or we're really struggling to hit the mid-range, or we can't get into the paint. And it's kind of just a combination of all three levels. They're just not figuring out a way to execute offensively.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're still not shooting the ball well from three. That's kind of been a theme all season, even though they had a handful of games where they looked a little bit more competent. But honestly, it's kind of weird because there's been certain guys that you thought needed to step up that have. Arthur Kaluma comes to mind. He's been playing a lot better the last couple of weeks. Obviously, he went down late in that Butler game, and we'll get into more of his status when we talk about Georgetown. But he's been playing better. You know, that we thought they needed some more wing scoring, and he's brought that to them. Trey Alexander's been playing better and fairly consistently. I think Ryan Nemhard, while he's not shooting the ball well, has at least kind of gotten out of that skid that he was in for a few weeks there. But we've got now Ryan Hawkins is inconsistent. Ryan Kalkbrenner's been banged up with the ankle and hasn't been himself. So it's weird because a lot of the players that we thought, or areas where we thought they needed to improve, they have, and it really hasn't made the offense any better.
Yeah, no, totally right. I mean, you think, we got somebody that can come off the bench and get us a dozen points a game, and Trey Alexander, and then you see an offensive slide somewhere else in the starting lineup. But regardless of the scoring, I'm still incredibly impressed by the defensive effort. I mean, I cannot believe that Creighton would ever be able to win a game.
That Creighton's ever been able to play defense, right? Like this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, I mean, at Connecticut on the 1st of February, 59 points. And
they out UConn'd UConn, right? Yeah. I mean, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday against Butler at home, in a game where it's traditionally, 20-point blowout, Jays shoot 50% from the three-point line. and run away with it by halftime. That was not the case. And they still managed to find a way to win the game, which is kind of my key takeaway from that. I think your offense is certainly in a slump right now, and that's going to be on the coaching staff and the players to get them in positions where they're going to be able to convert more effectively. But defensively and just energy effort level on that side of the floor is something that I don't think a Greg McDermott coach team has ever had while he's been at Creighton.
Where do you think that comes from? Because we thought that the defense might actually take a step back this year, both with the lack of experience and with Paul Lusk moving back to Purdue, obviously where he was a longtime assistant before he was the head coach of Missouri State there. But he was kind of given a lot of credit for the improvements we'd seen on the defense over the past few years. Where do you think this has come from? Is it just the fact is that Kalkbrenner's been one of the best interior defenders in the country, and then you've got some actual length and athleticism on the wings for once, or is there something more to it?
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly first and foremost, right? Defensively, from an X's and O's standpoint, this team is funneling the basketball to the basket, right? I mean, they're taking away three-point shots, whereas last year's team, right, would close out maybe a little bit short and try not to get beat to the rim. Mm-hmm. This team is closing out incredibly aggressive on three-point attempts and making guys put the ball on the floor and then attack the rim. And that's where Ryan has been so good, because he's been able to calm those guys down in a way that I don't think any other big in the league has been able to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're, I think, second in the league in interior field goal percentage. They're one of the best teams in the country in that area. It's, you said before they were kind of closing out short. Now they're like, yeah, go to the rim. Good luck with that. You know, like, and it seems like even with the ankle that's obviously been bothering Kalkbrenner for a couple games now, the rim protection still seems to be there. It seems to be where he's hurt the most, at least in my opinion, is on the offensive end. It seems like he struggled a lot to be able to establish himself with position and to kind of get his footwork off to get good shots, and moving on the perimeter when he's either showing on ball screens or anything like that. It seems like that's where the ankles bothered him the most. On the interior defense, it seems like it's been okay still.
Yeah, and he's been able to do all of that without fouling, right? Which I think is one of the most pivotal points. He's got to be in the game in order for that defense to work. But that ankle has definitely affected his side-to-side ability, and I think you've seen that most on the offensive end, right, where he's been a little lackadaisical, isn't the right word, but he's been a little hesitant to score the basketball, and I think that has a lot to do with just how he's feeling and the base that he has in the paint. But defensively, it doesn't seem to have affected him, at least this far.
Well, and think about the ways that he typically scores on offense, right? If he gets the ball with his back to the basket, he kind of will lean a shoulder in and then do a quick turn to the other side and get by a guy, right? I don't think that quick turn is there right now. Mm-hmm. I think that's the big issue offensively. I also think he's having a hard time establishing his base and getting good position in the first place. It seems like he's not getting his guys buried deep on the offensive end the way he was earlier in the season. Michael, I'll ask you this one. Aside from the defensive standpoint on the Butler game in the last couple games, what, if anything, have you seen as a positive? I know there's not a lot to love on the offensive end, but is there anything you've seen that's like, okay, this is something they can build on, even if it doesn't look awesome right now?
Yeah, I just wanted to look up shot quality, some of the defensive stats, and just to highlight Taylor's point, we are not giving up transition buckets, and we are 302nd from giving up catch and shoot three pointers from a frequency percentage. That's really awesome to see.
Yeah,
you think about college basketball now; it's all about three pointers and rim runs or layups. So, from the things that from a coaching staff that you can really highlight and applaud your guys on, I think we're doing a great job there. The other kind of missing person from a defensive standpoint is Ryan Hawkins. And I mean, the dude was, you know, all league, I think, defensively, D2. It's translated, and mm-hmm. he doesn't really get enough credit, but he, between deflections and just being help in the right spot, I think he's been outstanding. But it doesn't really get the limelight that obviously Kalkbrenner blocking shots and, yeah. you know, Alex O'Connell and Trey chasing dudes all over the court.
Yeah. I think also to point that out, Mike, is his communication, right? Mm-hmm. Something that, yeah. Okay, yeah, he's a guy who talks well, you know, when there's a screen coming. But he is teaching these young guys while they're on the floor, right, and over-communicating with them on where they're supposed to be. So not only is he in the right spot as much as he can be, right, even maybe sometimes outmatched athletically, but he's helping some of those more athletic young guys, you know, talking them over screens, letting them know what coverage is happening, what the personnel on the floor is. And so I think that is another underrated part of what Hawk has brought to this team.
Yeah, I think what it kind of reminds me of is he almost kind of has that middle linebacker mindset where he's not just in the right spot himself all the time, but he's communicating other guys into the right spot for them as well. It's not just telling them what's coming. It's also telling them where they need to be in order to defend what's coming. And I feel like if you haven't played competitive basketball in a while, and Taylor, you can speak to this better than I can, because as we established, what I played was not necessarily competitive basketball. I don't know that people totally understand how important that communication is, because I think a lot of people hear it and just say, oh, that's just a coach thing. They want the team to be like unified and work together. But if you've ever played on a team that doesn't talk defensively, it doesn't matter who the defenders are for the most part. It's awful. And you can have the exact same guys and just add even above average communication, and the level of defense just increases dramatically. Like, it's kind of crazy how much it matters.
Yeah, it really is. And I think one piece that goes with that is it not only is it help guys know where to be when they should be there and helps them process that a little bit quicker when you're talking, but it also, I think, brings up the energy level on mm-hmm. the defensive end, right? It helps the intensity and the focus. And that's why I like it when the Creighton coaching staff talks about all five guys being connected, right? And that is true, right? Because it's most possessions, it's not just they came down and they took a shot. Okay, great. We got a rebound. We got a stop. Awesome, right? There's, you know, there's different coverages on ball screens that happen. There are different rotations that have to happen. When each guy has the ball on the floor for the opposing team, there's different personnel out there. So you've got to know exactly how you're guarding, who you're guarding, and then those other four guys have to know what type of help they're able to provide. So mm-hmm. when you're over communicating like a guy in Ryan Hawkins, like he does, I mean, it's just vital for some of these guys who are, I mean, gosh, they're 18, 19 years old playing in their first year of college basketball.
Well, and I think it also establishes a level of trust as well, because half of what a good defense is trusting your help, right? Everybody gets beat at some point or another. That's just what it is. And if you never had help, you'd give up a ton of points, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're over-communicating, then you know your help is there. If somebody is over-communicating to you, you know your help is there. You don't have to worry about that. So you can play your assignment correctly rather than try and do too much and kind of play outside of what you're capable of, because you know the help's there. You know where it's supposed to be, and because they told you. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you don't have that level of over-communication, it's not just about, oh, you got a ball screen coming, or oh, you got a cutter coming through. It's also talked about like, hey, I got your help. Force the middle, whatever it is, right? And that creates a level of trustworthiness within your defense that it takes a while to get to otherwise.
Yeah, definitely does. And at 2 points there, Robbie, first is, you know, we saw this, I think in the first half of that Butler game, was they completely switched how they played from game one to game two, right? Mm-hmm. And instead of going back into kind of a drop coverage, if you will, or brown, as we used to call it, with Mac, they just started switching all of the ball screens, right? Mm-hmm. Any dribble handoff, any ball screen, any down screen, they were just switching everything. And then they came back in the second half, Creighton did, and then they went back to their original coverage that they had played at Butler, right? So mixing up those defenses inside the game is incredibly important too. Throws the offense off, even if it's just for a 4 or 5 minute stretch. And then the second point is, where Creighton has struggled when they have struggled defensively is when the opposing team has a five that can step out and shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. I go back to some of those really early games in the non-conference when you're playing against, mid-major teams, right?
Or that don't have real fives.
Yeah, who don't have real fives.
Yeah.
Right? And we had to put Kalkbrenner on the bench.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't able to get out and help and recover because he was pulled so far away from the basket. And then, you saw what happened as soon as he was out of the game. And so, I'm surprised more teams haven't gone to that. But I also know that defensively it's a liability for them. If, you've got a 7-1 guy in Kalkbrenner who's just eating in the paint, and goes for 20. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this year plays out, especially against some of the bottom half of the league, right, where they're trying to muck things up. They're trying to figure out any way, shape, or form to just get a W.
Right.
And so I could see some teams going to that approach and just going small ball against us.
Well, speaking of teams just trying to get W's, unless either you have anything more on Butler, I was going to move on to Georgetown here.
What a seamless transition, Robbie. It was amazing. I don't want to ruin it, but man, was that beautiful.
We've got Georgetown first tomorrow morning and then again on Monday, back-to-back outings there as one of those games had to get rescheduled because of COVID. But that's a team that obviously searching for any W's they can find. And I think one of them is going to come against Creighton. I hate to say it, but I think a win's coming in one of those games against Creighton. Creighton hasn't always played super well at Georgetown. Even some of their good teams in the last couple years have dropped games at Georgetown that they shouldn't have. So that concerns me a little bit. What about Georgetown do you see that is potentially concerning for you?
Well, I mean, other than the fact we never play well, other than that fact,
I mean, that's the basis of most of my analysis is like, well, no matter how bad Georgetown is, we usually don't play that well at Georgetown.
And you know what's going to happen, right? It's going to be an early East Coast tip, and there's going to be 3,500 people in a 22,000 seat arena. And it's going to be really slow, and there's not going to be a ton of energy in the building. And all of a sudden, it's a it's a 2-point game with 8 minutes left in the second half. I'm not saying that we could write the script right now, Robbie, but I'm telling you exactly what's
going to feel be. Like we could. And that's in most years, even a loss to a very bad Georgetown team isn't necessarily the end of the world. But with the stretch that Creighton currently has, they obviously beat Butler. They've got Georgetown twice, DePaul, and then they've got St. John's after they play Marquette. But they're playing the bottom three teams in the league a lot here in this stretch. And they kind of need to beat all of them because they can't afford another bad loss if they're trying to make the NCAA tournament. So that's why this Georgetown stretch is particularly concerning because, they do have some guys that have some level of talent. Aminu Muhammad's been having a really good year and could potentially be an issue for Creighton. They've got enough talent to probably steal one of these, despite the fact that they've been awful as a team all year long.
Yeah.
Talk about offensive inconsistency. I mean, they got guys going for 25 one night and two the next. So maybe they feel some of our pain or maybe and those will be the guys that against us, they'll get back to that 25 number, but
Yeah, that's the, you know, I fully expect to have, you know, let's see, who's a rando on their roster? I fully expect Billingsley to go off for like 30 on us and get a career high. No, but yeah, you're kind of getting to my point here, is they've got guys that there is a level of talent, but they're wildly inconsistent. They've got three guys averaging basically 13 points a game, and then a couple more that are, and then another one that's at 11. So you've got a lot of depth in terms of scoring options, but it's not like each one of those guys is getting 13 points a game. Like you said, sometimes they're getting 24, sometimes they're getting 8, and you just really have no idea what you're going to get on any given night. So it's a, I would imagine this is a particularly tough scout for Creighton.
Yeah, it is, and that will be nice, right, that they're playing back-to-back. So that will make the scout a little bit easier the second time, clearly. But I guess I'm most concerned with just how does this Creighton team go on the road and take care of business? Are they 100%? Are they all fully healthy? You know, we saw Arthur Kaluma go down in that second half. We know Kalkbrenner has been dealing with that ankle injury. And then obviously just over the course of the Big East season, you've got those nicks, bumps, and bruises that come along. So while Georgetown on paper looks like, oh, it's, you know, easy six, 8 point win on the road, call it good. I mean, it's going to take a big time effort from Creighton to get this W.
I mean, just being honest, I don't feel great with Creighton being a, and I don't think the lines come out yet, but let's say it's a 6 to 8 point favorite. I wouldn't feel comfortable with Creighton being that much of a favorite basically over anybody in the Big East right now, just because that's how all their games have gone, right? They're not blowing anybody out at this point in the season. They're struggling offensively. Even if they're, I mean, that Butler game is a great example, right? They started to pull away. I think it was 48-40, and you're like, all right, Creighton might cruise away to a comfortable victory. And then it's like, boom, 9 minute scoring drought. And all of a sudden they're down with a minute left. So I agree. That's probably what you would expect if you could, you know, just line these teams' resumes up against each other is somewhere between a 6 and 10 point victory. But I don't feel that way. You know, maybe I'm too close to it, but I don't feel that way at all.
Well, that's why they play the game, Ravi. That's why they play the game. So you have to tune in tomorrow morning to catch that one. But I would love to see them just start to maybe just string a couple together, right? I mean, this is an important time for them to take care of the bottom half of the league. And I think for seeding purposes, come the first week and in March, it's going to be vitally important to be in that top five in New York City. So I think a couple of the keys for the game tomorrow. One is, can Creighton get out of this shooting slump?
Oof.
Ooh. Can they stop? Right? It doesn't have to be. They don't have to shoot 75%.
Like 40% would be nice.
Can we get 33%?
I mean, 33.
Right? The average college basketball shooter shoots 33% from the three-point line. Can we just be average shooting the basketball? I think that gets the job done tomorrow morning. And then the next piece is just how do we control the pace of the game?
Yeah.
I think that's always important when you get this team and they're moving super fast and they're cutting with pace and they're moving the ball. You start to see some of that offense click and then getting easy buckets. There has not been many, oh, here's a fast break layup or here is a wide open three. So how do they manufacture some of those easy points so that they're not scoring, you know, 50 points in 40 minutes of play?
I would just really love to see more than two guys play well at the same time offensively. Mm-hmm. That to me is because we've seen it all year, right? You would have, okay, Nembhard was playing really well and Hawkins was playing really well. And then O'Connell was playing really well and Kalkbrenner was playing really well. Now Kaluma's playing really well and Alexander's playing really well. But we haven't been able to get more than two at a time, right? Mm-hmm. If you can get three or four of those guys to play not even their best game, but if they can play good games at the same time, I think that alleviates a lot of your scoring problems, right? Because if Kaluma and O'Connell are going at the same time, that helps out a lot, right? Yeah, if Hawkins and Alexander and Kaluma, or Hawkins and Nembhard and Alexander and O'Connell are getting going at the same time, that brings you so much more versatility on the offensive end. Whereas right now it feels like I'm watching a Nebraska team where it's just like, I don't know where the, like, it's the old Doc Sadler teams. I don't know where the next bucket's coming from. Yeah. If we can get to 48, we've got a chance today. You know, it's like, that's not why I became a Creighton fan. That's why I did not become a Nebraska fan. I like points, man.
Well, I think you saw that on Tuesday a little bit with the crowd, right? I mean, it's fun when the ball's going through the rim and they're high flying and they're making threes and they're high fiving, getting back to playing defense. But it's tough to watch basketball when there's not a lot of scoring. And for an, you know, your average fan that has season tickets to the CHI, it's tough to watch a game that's 54-52. And so, you know, finding ways, simple ways to score the basketball. I was able to have lunch with Brody Darren, who's another broadcaster on the radio with me for Creighton. And we just talked a lot about, Creighton either needs to figure out a way to get penetration and have the ball touch the paint, right? Or they're going to have to be able to step back under some of these dribble handoffs and ball screens and knock down some shots. Because right now defenses are just, they're just crawling under that ball screen and that dribble handoff, and there's no penetration, right? So that when you don't have anybody that's able to create a, you know, a one-on-one shot consistently, then you have to find a way to break down the defense. And really the best way to do that is to get the ball to touch the paint.
Well, and one of the ways that Creighton was making up for not being able to get that penetration earlier in the year was Ryan Kalkbrenner with his post touches. But since he's been struggling, since he tweaked the ankle now a couple times this year, he's tweaked it and hasn't really looked like himself since then. That eliminates another opportunity to get paint touches and to break the defense down a little bit, right? Because we were seeing where teams were sending a double team and he could kick it right back out to somebody who's open, who could either shoot the ball or re-penetrate, and boom, all of a sudden you have an open lane to the basket. That's not really happening anymore because of how uncomfortable Kalkbrenner appears to be on that ankle. But Brody's right. And honestly, if you shoot the ball better, it fixes both of them, right? Because if you shoot the ball better, they have to fly out. You don't have to be that good of a ball handler or shot creator to get into the paint when somebody's flying by you, right? Mm-hmm. Just a little head shoulder fake and you're gone. You know, that's not, you don't have to be a real dynamic. You don't have to be Marcus Foster get into the paint when somebody's flying by you like that, right? Mm-hmm. But again, this is a team that they're shooting, 31%, 32% on the season. The last six games, I think they're down in the low 20s.
Yeah.
So even dramatically worse than that, if they could just make a few shots to keep people honest, it really does open everything back up. And especially with Kalkbrenner not being 100% to give them that other facet, somebody's got to start hitting shots for them.
Yeah. No, I think that's the key right there, man. Basketball's a lot easier when the ball's going through the rim. So
I mean, you know, it's a kind of a cliche, but it is a make-miss game. Like there is. You can play as good.
We don't need shot takers. We need shot makers.
That's right.
All right. It's a little shout out to our main man, Len Gordy, on the bench.
I mean, listen, you can play as good a defense as you want. You still got to score a bucket at some point. Otherwise, you still don't win that game.
Yep.
You can hold them to 0 points, but if you don't score either, you still don't win.
Yeah.
Like, play the best defense you want. Somebody's got to get a bucket at some point.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that they get this going here, man. I think against it, like you said, against the bottom half of the league, they got to get some offensive momentum going into the beginning of March.
All right. So we've got Georgetown twice in a row, DePaul. I think if they lose one of these Georgetown games, which, like I said, I think is viable, that they very well might, I think they have to steal either Marquette or at Providence to kind of make up for it when we're talking about an NCAA tournament standing there. What do you guys think about this team and how they're looking in terms of getting in the NCAA tournament?
Go ahead, Mike.
I like to look at Bracket Matrix, which yep. is the sort of aggregator of all the sites. You know, I thought preseason, if we get to 500, we get in. I'm not going to talk about Providence not coming to play us at home and us having to go there because we don't have enough time for that, nor is this a rated R podcast. But
I was going to say, are we allowed to say swear words on this podcast?
No, Robbie, it's for the kids.
I've got some for Ed Cooley and company. If I thought him and Mac were tight, what's going on here, Cooley?
They're the boys.
If we can, I think 5-4 and take one in New York.
Yeah.
We'll see our name called on Selection Sunday. That's kind of my 5-4 gets us to 11-9, one Big East tournament win. And we're dancing. That's my prediction. I don't know what we need to do to get more people on the Big East bandwagon. All I hear about is the Big 12 and the SEC. I think the SEC is good. I think the ACC stinks. I think the Big 12 is okay top to bottom. Our league does not get enough love.
Well, yeah, I mean, Providence is, what, they're 20-2 on the season and they're like 15th?
Mm-hmm. It's a joke.
That doesn't make any sense. Honestly, the only team that consistently gets love in this league is Villanova. Yeah. And honestly, I thought they were overrated for parts of the season because they did take, I mean, they weren't bad losses, but they took a handful of losses early and still kind of kept their rating. I can't believe how long it's taken Providence. And I know some of the analytics and stuff don't love Providence from a number standpoint, but they're 20-2 at this point in the season. At some point you have to say like, yep, this might be a pretty good basketball team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And very similar to how Creighton's found a way to win these basketball games. I mean, they just find a way to win. It doesn't always have to be pretty. I mean, there is nothing sexy about running Ed Cooley's all-cutter offense and this flex cut after flex cut after flex cut inside of the paint. There is nothing attractive about that. But they go on the road and they beat big time names, you know, big time schools in Big East play, and they go home and they defend home court at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. So I don't know what else you can ask of them to, you know, be in the top 10, but I think certainly deserving to be a top 10 team in the country.
Yeah, it's a little odd because if you look at, you know, net rankings and you look at kind of where just the overall bracket projections, you know, it does seem like the Big East gets a certain amount of love because they're looking at 6 or 7 teams in the tournament, according to most bracketologists, but the polls and the seeding don't really reflect the strength of the league in the same way that they would a Big 12 conference that I think is a little overblown and an ACC, which is basically living off of reputation at this point. Mm-hmm. Because that's not – honestly, the ACC feels a lot like the SEC normally feels.
Yes.
This year, where, you know, you maybe have a couple heavy hitters at the top, and then the rest is just hot, steaming, wet garbage.
Garbage. But, I mean, look at this. Providence went and won at Wisconsin. They beat Northwestern, who's whatever. They beat Texas Tech at home. They beat Vermont at home. By the way, Vermont is the most efficient basketball team I've ever watched in my life. And they're 20-2, and Bracket Matrix has these guys as a 5 seed. Are you kidding?
Yeah, they should be like a 2-3 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand they're you know, not on the one line. I get that, but this feels like a 2 or 3 seed team.
Yeah,
guess we'll see come March. But
it's, I mean, a little, if they go unfair out and win the Big East tournament, right? I mean,
it's gonna be hard.
They have one or two more losses throughout the course of the season, but they go out and win in the Big East tournament. It's going to be tough to not give them a 2 or 3 seed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they're what? I don't know what that number would be, but say they're like 28-4, 27-4, mm-hmm. Big East regular season and conference title, or regular season and tournament title. You're telling me that team's not a 2 seed? I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
All right, well, I believe Stormy's got to go get his second the basketball tournament workout in of the day. What are we lifting today, Stormy? What's the routine look like?
I've been on a big CrossFit kick as of late. Normally morning workout guy, 6 o'clock, but Got a chance to play some hoops this morning at 6. So I took that up. Let's pull this workout up real quick. We have a little Metcon today for you.
Okay.
We got all three right. Pounds. Okay. So you got to go through this three times. It's a 100 double unders. So that's okay. Jump ropes, but you got to spin it twice. And then 50 dumbbell snatches. So you got to do 50 pounds there and then an 800 meter run. So you got to do that.
Three rounds of that.
You got to do that three rounds and you got 25 minutes to do it.
I was going to go with beer.
What's that take? About 20, 30 minutes? Yeah, 25 minutes. That makes sense.
Yep, you got 25 minutes, and wherever you end up, that's where you stop the workout. So I'm going to go try to get that in real quick. Hopefully it's still nice enough out to run, I hope.
It's a little chilly. The wind picked up a little bit.
Okay. It's a tidbit nipply out there.
It is. It is. I'm actually heading to the gym too, I think, but I like the bodybuilder style workouts a little bit
okay.
more.
Okay. Are you deadlift, back
no.
squat?
So I used to be a power lifter. Yeah. I like competed and stuff, but I had to switch all that because long story short, I like burst a blood vessel in my eye and almost lost vision in my eye. So we're not doing the big three lifts anymore because it's too much internal. Your blood pressure spikes when you do it real bad, and it causes all sorts of problems. So
yeah.
We're not doing those anymore. So I don't get I'm obsessed with the bench press. So I don't get a bench anymore, which is a bummer. But you know, I get out there, get a nice pump in. You know, do a little bodybuilding style workouts, kind of you know the old Arnold stuff. You know,
the old Arnold stuff. Yeah. I was thinking about a celebrity comparison for you, Robbie, and Arnold was the first guy that came to mind.
I don't know that I have his Austrian look quite down.
Maybe we'll get him on the next pod.
Yeah. Let's do that.
We'll get the Terminator on the next pod. All right. Well, we'll let you get to your CrossFit workout. We'll let Michael get to his beer here. And we'll hopefully be talking about a couple of Creighton wins the
big
next
week.
Time. Crossing our fingers, talking about taking care of business against the bottom of the league. And we'll be talking to you again soon, hopefully. What do you think? About a week?
Yeah, probably.
About another week?
Yeah.
See in a week.
End next week. We got three games in a week. So
yeah. So we'll recap this the big week here. And you guys have a Super Bowl prediction for me before we let you go?
I'm taking the Rams to cover.
Wow. I'm thinking like 24-21 Bengals.
I would say I'm fully drinking the Joe Burrow Kool-Aid. I'm in. I want the Bengals.
I don't know how he's not going to get his head ripped off by the Rams defensive front.
Yeah, Aaron Donald and Von Miller might kill him.
Yeah, they might. But I think he's been doing a good job of getting the ball out quick lately. So, and it's just too hard. It's too hard to bet against him. I would take Joe Burrow over Matthew Stafford any day of the week. And that's kind of where I'm sitting right now.
On swag alone.
On swag alone, new day.
All right. Well, we got two Bengals. We got a Rams to cover.
Good luck.
And we'll see how that goes. But for Ravi Lula, Taylor Stormberg, Michael Vandervoort, this has been episode 3 of the Let It Fly podcast here on Jays 24/7. Make sure you also check out the website, jays247.com. All sorts of good content on there. And maybe next time we'll get into, I went to go see Jason Green play over at Miller North. So maybe we'll get into that a little bit next time. A little teaser for you.
Hey, love it.
All right. We'll talk to you boys again soon.
See ya.